there. Welcome to Title Now. I'm Shannon Widman, Deputy General Counsel of the Fund. We host these pop-up webinars on a monthly basis to bring you the latest in the industry insights and matters that affect your practice as DIRT attorneys and members of the Fund. You can find the full Title Now library on thefund.com, and you can reach the podcast wherever you get podcasts. So after today, of course, we'll push this out as a podcast, and you can get that wherever you get all of your other podcasts. So joining me today is Tom Cronkrite. Thank you so much, Tom. Most of you know that Tom is Certified's co-founder and executive chairman. And Tom, you've been in front of our members before. Thank you so much for coming.
No, Shannon, no problem. I'm a big fan of the funds and Old Republic. We're a large OR agent here in Michigan as well under Sun Title.
Well, we appreciate you so much. If you could remind our webinar attendees, some of them may have seen you at Fund Assembly. Maybe they've seen you speak before, but maybe some haven't. So if you could just give a little bit of background and insight as to what type of person you are, how you got here, and what is Certified.
Well, just quickly, because I think there's more important topics than me, but you opened it up. So 60 seconds, a recovering attorney by trade, turned title agency owner, along with my business partner, Lawrence Stuller, who's a CPA and an attorney. We got into the title business. We were just frustrated as transactional attorneys around title service and communication back in 2005. In 2015, we had a significant wire fraud incident that cost us just under $200,000, led to 2 years of civil litigation in Bell County, Texas to recover the funds. And then about a year and a half after that, I was called as a lead witness by the Department of Justice to help disassemble what they had uncovered as the Nigerian Black Axe operating in North America. So to say that I have been intimately involved is probably an understatement, end to end, and Certified, the fraud prevention platform that we created, came out of our learnings and insights of all of that activity that took place, similar to fund members, attorneys acting as title agents, acting as escrow agents, trying to make, you know, the closing safe and a memorable closing experience. And now Certified has grown into just a widely used platform nationally to help secure transfers. But I will say this, and then we'll get into more of the discussion. There isn't a day that I'm removed from the same risk that the fund members are seeing day to day. And that's one of the benefits of the duality of the role that I play now as executive chairman, but also as large title agent. And I want to share with you some of the trends that we're seeing even this month heating up that we haven't seen in months past. But I'm really happy to be here. And I want to thank not only the fund, but those of you participating for just leaning in and continuing to be a student of this, because it's going to continue to evolve. And it's not evolving in a good direction right now. And we'll get into generative AI and why I say that. But all right, I lied. It was more than 60 seconds.
Well, you're right. And Certified itself has become a household name among fund members. You know, I'd like to say it's because of our great relationship that we have with y'all, but really, sadly, it's because fraud is on the rise. And we're always trying to stay one step ahead of the criminals. It's really hard to do that. You know, we have wire fraud, seller ID fraud, payoff estoppel fraud. There are so many vishing, which is not phishing, but vishing with a V. This is it, all of these different things that we didn't have to worry about before. So we're just trying to stay on top of things to protect against that. And we appreciate your help in helping educate and keep our members up to date. So let's get right into that. So, you know, where does this kind of infiltration of fraud begin? We have fund members who get their referrals from real estate agents and brokers. Some are mortgage brokers, some developers, some builders. But let's take real estate agents, for example. That seems to be our predominant referral source for members. They use these lead generators, so they get leads for listings from national website platforms. What happens there? Is that a door that's open that puts us at risk? And what are the others?
Yeah, I think that's a good segue. So let's take seller impersonation fraud. And seller impersonation fraud stems from exactly what you're saying, Shannon, is there's a bad actor that can easily go into the county records and can identify if a parcel of property is improved or unimproved. And it either show up as vacant, improved, or unimproved. Maybe there's other nomenclature used in different counties, but they do this on a scalable basis. Scrape county records. Let's say there's 500,000 parcels in a county. They can quickly run what's called a pivot analysis, identify the keywords that the county uses, and then they can sort. Again, they go to the taxing authority, look at the assessed value. They can quickly see if there's any encumbrances, and now they have their ideal target. I mean, there's a science behind this. This isn't just happenstance, meaning higher value, unencumbered. One was reported this morning on the shores of Lake Michigan in an area called Saugatuck. Very, very desirable property. And it was a seller impersonation. So what they'll do is they can see the ownership record. They use the tax bill address as the address they'll use. They'll create a fake ID, which are so good right now, guys. I mean, it's incredible. And then they'll solicit to Zillow, Realtor, Homes, it doesn't matter. And then they actually come through as a vetted lead. So the agent, and think about the timing of this, it's brilliant on their behalf. Agents are starving for listing activity. So it comes at a perfect time for the scammer when inventory levels are, last year's sales were essentially the same as 1995, so 4 million units, and they will impersonate the seller all the way through to providing the ID. A lot of them now are looking at GIS and they know the acreage. They look at some of the history of transfer, like they're developing and curating their own backstory to make it more believable to the listing agent that I'm dealing with the property owner. They can never meet on site. They're traveling for some reason, either medical or job or family typically. And they'll typically ask for an at or slightly below listing with a quick closing. And that's vacant land. They're all cash deals too, right? So, and they already know it's not encumbered. So that's where you get into seller impersonation. One of the things, and there'll be some like three or four takeaways I really want the fund members to take back to their teams. One, if you have a request to process a vacant piece of property, you have to assume you're not dealing with the actual property owner until you've verified their identity and their credentials being presented.
So they don't start with the benefit of the doubt. They start with, they are a fraudster, prove me wrong.
Don't even start title. Like, we don't even start title, and we're educating on this nationally now. Don't even burn the calories until you can identify that this, in fact, is the individual that owns that parcel of property. Because what happens is you get further down the line, everything heats up, knowledge doesn't transfer from one person in the office to the other, and unbeknownst to you, we didn't actually verify, we closed, funded, and recorded, and now we have a huge post-closing issue. And the litigation around this, guys, is a hot mess, an absolute hot mess. So yes, the rule is, this isn't trust but verify. This is verify before you can even start thinking about trusting the party that is presenting themselves as the property owner.
Yeah, definitely a shift in the approach over the last few years. At this time, I want to bring to the attention of our viewers that Michael Rothman in our legal ed department, he is here as a moderator, and he is taking your questions that you are submitting online in GoToWebinar. So please do write in or type in I should say, your questions, and we will try to get to all of those at the end the best we can. But I wanted to let you know now so you know that we're going to try to answer those today at the end of the webinar. So what, Tom, would you say is, if, of all the things for a small practice, solo firm, you know, sole practitioner, small firm situation, if there's just one thing that they should change in terms of their apparatus, their email, you know, their security for their whole system, what is one security feature that they should be looking for that would help them? I know there are many different types. There's secure email. There's you know, very complicated systems that they could purchase, but one is multi-factor authentication. I mean, there are different things that our attorneys hear about, but they can't go to all of them. You know, it's a small firm, but what are the one or two things that they should look for?
I want to answer that. And Shannon, I do want to go back to the other like scams that are, that are evolving kind of in real time. So from a, from what I call a hygiene or security perspective, you have to secure the email. So it's a three-pronged approach there, unfortunately, rather than one. And I'll say this with anything, if there's no silver bullet, it's more of a layering approach. And the bad actors are human beings. They're running a playbook. If you frustrate them at scale, they will move on. They'll move on to another target that hasn't done the things that we're going to talk about today. The first is you have to subscribe to some type of email filtering. Mimecast, Barracuda, there's others. Roughly 90 to 95% of all emails inbound to Sun Title are captured and rejected by our Mimecast filters. And I'm not a spokesperson for Mimecast, but I'm just saying that lower the chances that somebody's going to click on something and make a mistake, right? It's not expensive. Your email essentially routes through that. It gets analyzed and then it drops down into, let's say you're an Outlook user, okay? The benefit of that is called consortium intelligence. What do I mean by that? If I see an email, it looks to be coming from Shannon, the real estate agent, and I click, this looks suspicious, and I'm going to report it, guess what? If you saw a similar email impersonating an agent, impersonating one of your customer agents that had the same profile, you're not even going to see it because I reported it. That's the consortium effect. So email filtering and monitoring. 2% of ours have malicious attachments. About 5% have malicious links. I mean, this is bad, bad stuff that would otherwise hit somebody's inbox. The second is you can't, and I know this is hard, you can't share passwords between what you're doing at work and what you and your family are doing at home. So if your American Airlines password is I love to travel, you should not have the I love to travel for your title production software, or your treasury portal, or your title, or you know, anything you're doing, your email, for example. So bifurcate the password and use a password manager. OnePass, LastPass. So don't share passwords and use a password manager. That's where you have to come up with some crazy password that only you're going to remember, which should be a passphrase. And then through there, you can log into your key sites. That's the second thing. The third thing is what Shannon mentioned, is not just multi-factor authentication. So remember, username, password, and then a one-time or unique code. Make sure those codes or tokens reset every 24 hours.
And that's called a rolling code? Is that what that is?
Some rolling codes you could have literally, we used to have, I don't know, I'll date myself a little bit, where you'd be working with a bank and you have literally one of those tokens that every 2 minutes you got a different sequence that you had
like
to put in.
A USB stick, right?
It's similar to that, but especially if you're Outlook using, you can actually set what's called token revocation. Token revocation is I have a code, I had to put mine in. Mine resets every 12 hours and I'm typically working in the evening. So I had a minute this morning early where I was online and then it kicked me off at about 9 o'clock. We went offline because I hit my 12-hour mark. So you can set in Microsoft and in Google, when do you revoke that token? When do you get a new token? Every single day, our people have to receive a unique token. So even if the bad actor somehow got in yesterday, they'd have to run the same play today to get back into the email. Okay. It's those three things. I could go on to infrastructure and perimeter security, but you're right. There's a lot of technology out there. What you should be most concerned about right now, and if you don't mind, Shannon, I want to dip into an alarming trend that we're seeing across
the country. Let's go back to that.
And that's token hijacking. So token hijacking, this is what they're doing. Let's say you bank with ABC Bank, and one of your paralegals or your processors or disbursement team members gets a call from the fraud desk of ABC Bank. The bad actor has the username and password of the individual that they're targeting. They just need the token. They need the multi-factor authentication code. So what they're doing on one screen is they have the username and password, and then they just need this code. So they impersonate typically the wire desk or the fraud desk, and they say, hey, John Doe attorney, we noticed a suspicious wire. We think it's fraud. I'm going to send, you know, if you can go on to the Treasury portal, I'm going to send you a code by text message or email. If you repeat that back to me, it'll allow me to look into this.
Wow.
And what they're doing is they have the username and password on the other screen. When the person verbally gives that code back, they're in the account. So this isn't a diversion of wire. We're seeing more bad actors actually circumventing and getting access to the escrow or the operating account and sending money out of there.
Unreal.
This has been, and I should report this to Alta, but this has been probably the biggest trend that we've seen in 2025 is they're going right for the code. Like, forget the one-off wire. I'm going to drain the entire account. And we've seen that over a series of like 24, 48, 72 hours, millions of dollars being siphoned off to all different accounts or crypto wallets.
Yeah, that's really unsettling because they don't have to succeed, but a fraction of the time that they succeed in wire fraud.
Yeah, so the second thing to take away today is go back and train your teams and get with your bank and say, okay, if there was, what is your protocol for communicating if you see a problem in our escrow account, our IOLTA account, or our general account? Like, what can I expect? Are you going to call me? Who's going to call me? You're not going to send an email, but never, ever, ever should somebody be verbally or through email or text responding to a token that is sent from the lender.
Wow.
Never.
All right. Good to know.
Another trend that we're seeing is buyers continually being exposed to diverting their cash to close or closing obligation funds to somebody that is impersonating the law firm or impersonating the title agency.
Spoofing. Right.
Yep. And you asked about real estate agents. They typically get in through the real estate agent or the mortgage lender. It could be the title, but typically it's the real estate agent. Real estate agent clicks on a phishing link. It's very well crafted. They quickly, you know, filter, change rule settings in the back end, and now they're just looking for upcoming transfers. So the best antidote to that is securely sharing your wiring instructions, like through certified. We do that order entry now. We don't wait till title commitment issuance. Everybody's receiving our wiring instructions and proper education up front. And then just setting them up for success on what is their expectation of funding and what is your expectation of funding. And it seems simple, but we're not having the conversation. We can't wait for closing scheduled. We need to move it kind of up funnel to, I would argue, at least by the time the title commitment is issued, if not before. The last is mortgage payoffs. And I know we've been talking about mortgage payoff fraud for so long. It continues to be the largest loss vector for title agents across the country because the dollars are so big. What we're seeing now, and this is another trend, is and I don't know if fund members, and I'd love if you put it in the Q&A to Michael, are you seeing more solicitations from major lender servicers or major lenders saying, hey, I want to open an order, or I'm checking on title status. I got one today that I sent out to our group that was asking for, you know, a CD update. And they're so good, they're passing through the filters and it looks like it's coming from Mr. Cooper. It looks like it's coming from, you know, whatever the servicer's name is. And you download the attachment or even open it, you click on the link, and all of a sudden malware or they're harvesting credentials to get into an account. So those are some of the trends. We've seen more direct solicitations from what appear to be mortgage servicers or mortgage companies requesting to open title in the last probably 60 days than we saw all of last year. And I'm not exaggerating, like something is going on. So be on the lookout for that. If you're not expecting an order, you know, and it's coming out of the blue, and especially for me, if you're sending me a title order, you know you've hit the wrong inbox.
Right.
But it's something to be on the lookout for. You have to be very intentional.
That's incredible. And it's especially hard for title agents or law firms that have more than one, you know, office. You know, if they have one office in one town and they have another office in another town, they don't know if that order was supposed to just go to a satellite office or if it was meant for somebody else at the firm that is somewhere they're not. So I can see that being a huge problem.
One 2 days ago. I mean, I'm literally sending something to our team. It seems like every other day. It was 2 days ago. I was traveling and it looked like it was a solicitation coming from Mr. Cooper on just an updated payoff. And the country root domain was Serbia. And you could see if you really unmasked the reply to or the from, that this isn't coming from Mr. Cooper at all.
Right.
This is a bad actor overseas. So just be really, and I think that's another thing, like training your people on, don't just look at the email, like look at the string and look at the, like click on it. Don't look at it mobily and see where it's actually coming from.
Yeah. Yeah. And probably an IP address, a geographic block, is probably a good tool to use too, to filter out a few of the bad actors as well.
Yeah, we had another one just by way of example. We had an attorney here locally, real estate attorney, that was full on compromised. We confirmed. He sent over a spreadsheet asking for us to upload some file and some login information. And you go out of band. So I looked him up on Google. I picked up the phone. I got in contact with his staff member and they confirmed, yep, we've had a security incident. And, you know, that's a malicious email.
Wow. Yikes. All right. So how about solutions? Before we get to
the solutions so quickly. Yes.
Yeah, I know. I know this half hour goes quick. So, but I know Certified has solutions, but what I'd like to do in particular is look at our old school solutions, E&O insurance, cyber insurance. What does that cover? What does it not cover? How can Certified help? What are the things we need to look for? There are a lot of fund members right now that are also shopping for software solutions. And what should they be looking for in terms of integrations or software solutions when it comes to security?
So Shannon, and we had this at the fund assembly, and I'll send this back to you. We created a tech stack that we can provide the fund members. I don't know if you have a copy. If not, I'll provide you one. And it's essentially the tech stack that we use at SunTitle. Technology is very confusing. It can be super expensive, but you have to know where it fits. I think of terms of like, what are the layers of security consist of? It's people. We'll get into this real quick. Process, technology. You have to have incident response and you need insurance. It's those five things working together to understand where the risks and vulnerabilities are in either managing or insuring if you can't fully manage them down to a zero risk perspective. And you can't. I think that's the reality. This is more like investing in managing it at scale, frustrating these people and having them move on. E&O insurance hasn't changed except for the fact that it's become crystal clear that they're not covering for cyber breach. So E&O is, hey, we have professional standards, we have licensing standards, we have Alta standards, we have all these things that we need to discharge. as part of the title closing and settlement process. And E&O will remain that insurance that makes sure that we did our job correctly. And if not, it will, trigger possibly coverage where we might not have coverage otherwise. That's E&O. Cyber picks up where your system is breached. So think of it, somebody infiltrated your system, data's stolen and siphoned off. Possibly there's somebody logged into an account and did something nefarious. Where it gets squishy, even with Fidelity, and Fidelity I think of as like the inside job, right? I had a bad actor internally and somebody was harmed. Those are the three major policies, and I'm not trying to oversimplify them. Where it gets squishy is this idea that somebody was socially engineered. Because when somebody is socially engineered, the transfer of funds ends up being a voluntary act made under a false pretense. And most insurance coverages will essentially either deny or sublimit significantly down wire fraud after somebody's been tricked to do a voluntary act. If somebody breaches my system and steals my data, that's an involuntary act. Somebody stole something from me. But if I believe I'm communicating with Shannon and I wire her $500,000 net proceeds and I was influenced and tricked, am I covered for that? That either sits on a supplemental rider to E&O or a supplemental cyber crime policy for social engineering or rider for social engineering. But the devil's in the details. I'm only going to get coverage if I called Shannon back, if I independently called on a verified number, if I documented the call, if I did these 18 things that if I would have done it, I wouldn't have wired to Shannon, right? So I think you have to approach this, and I don't mean to be so direct or callous, that you don't have meaningful or any wire fraud insurance protection. Because either the sublimits, the conditions precedent to coverage, or the fact that you don't get to choose the amount that you're going to wire. So if I have a sublimit of 250 and my average sale price in Florida is $1 million, then you're so underinsured, it might not be meaningful anyway.
And it's expensive. So what are you paying for?
It is. And look, I buy a lot of insurance. I call it check every box. I want every argument that I can if there, God forbid, that there's a loss. Where Certified steps in, and this is why we created the program, is that we'll insure the transaction up to $5 million. So I know that there's commercial, and we have them too, that doesn't cover everything. But in a blender, it covers most. And we have a specific policy backed by our insurance partners in London that will protect the incoming funds when Certified is used and all outgoing. So we have payoff protect, the seller net proceeds, direction of funds requests on a back-to-back, commissions, all of that. So it kind of stands in this void, and they've never insured anything like this before, where we know the markets aren't supporting the title agents and the law firms for meaningful coverage.
So if I'm a fund member, which I was for 24 years, and I wanted to engage Certified to help me with my transactions, but I'm a solo small practice firm and I can't afford to spend, you know, X number of dollars per year, but I can't afford a certain amount because it's the cost of doing business. How are those costs structured? Is there a different structure for smaller firms or a per transaction basis? Or I don't need to know how much it costs, but I need to know how that cost is structured for the smaller firms.
Yes and yes. So we have come up with a program for what we call small, medium-sized businesses. And we'd like to have, if you've had a conversation with us in the past, it's time to revisit that conversation because we have changed some of the pricing and packaging models for small to medium-sized businesses. And my heart breaks because those are the ones most vulnerable if there is that loss. And that's not a way to end a firm or a career, not like that. We should be able to do that through conscious, intentional effort, not through fraud. So reach out, and we've got a great program with the fund. We have a great program nationally with OR, and we're addressing that and have addressed that in the previous ones based on feedback like this. So we're a company that listens and adapts. And so if you thought, man, that's just too expensive, there's a way now to, and I think Florida, you can pass along direct costs. So we're making it even easier to pass along those costs. And I think the reality of it is in the go-to-market setting, and this is what we've done with our agency, making the investments in the things that we've talked about is a strategic advantage. And if you can train your agents to say, hey, not only will I list the property and run a process and get you the highest value, but I work with a law firm that will protect your funds in the process and protect your information in the process, you'd be surprised. More consumers are leaning into that to say, okay, I didn't hear that from the other agent.
Right.
And your agent, your referral sources could be more competitive as well.
Truly a selling point. And I think as more of these, you know, articles come out about buyers and sellers losing their entire livelihood because of a real estate transaction where their wire was diverted offshore somehow, either on its way in or on its way out from title, then more people are going to come to realize that it really is something that's value added to the service that's provided. So
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
And get your team, get your house in order, and then go out and use that in your markets to keep and grow relationships or develop new ones. Because we have, I could give you example after example of agents in our markets that are winning business on that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, before we take questions, one more thing we just read about in the news, this very exciting $47.5 million Series C investment in Certified, and we figured that you may have some plans, some idea of what to do with that investment, and we'd like to hear about what kind of plans Certified has in the future for its growth and what can it do to protect
that.
Us.
And it's the continued mission that we're on right now. There's just so many integrations and insights that we want to continue to develop and scale so that we can essentially remove more of the opportunities for bad actors to infiltrate these transactions. I mean, that's at a high 80,000 foot kind of level. And our mission is to protect all transfers. There shouldn't be a choice between a safe closing and I lost my life savings. Those shouldn't be the bookends anymore. So we'll continue to develop new products, which we already have on the roadmap. We're continuing to expand out our insurance program, which we recently increased to 5 million, and just the team, just an amazing team and other talent that we're bringing on board to do these things, not in haste, but to build these things out with intention and as frankly, as quickly as we can to bring them to market. And we've always had a broad vision at Certified, and this partnership that we have with Santana and the new investment is humbling in a way that even the most sophisticated investors in the identity verification space see Certified as kind of a winning solution. And I think we'll move into other adjacent markets. Once we continue that build out in real estate, we have a handful of other markets that are just waiting to say, hey, we need that solution as well. But we're not leaving real estate till we fully figure this thing out. If we ever will, maybe we won't, because it's generative AI is throwing a wrench in it right now. They're becoming better and better at what they do.
Well, that's for sure. That's for sure. But it sounds like you have some pretty exciting stuff on the horizon. So we'll be looking forward to that. Let's check in with Michael. Michael, how are we doing on the Q&A?
Hey, guys. Tom, thanks again. Great program. Couple of quick questions. Are we seeing seller impersonation fraud on larger commercial vacant tracts, or is this still primarily a residential issue?
It's primarily a residential issue, but I don't want to give that a false sense of hope. Because we have heard, and I know of significant losses that have taken place on the commercial side, but I would say the 98.2, if you're looking at 98% of them, seem to be residentially zoned. Again, that's just a zoning. So I would say just vacant, either commercial or residential vacant parcels are in the same risk category. The non-owner occupied, I think, is the next frontier. Your vacation homes, your second homes, tax bills going to a different address than the parcel, you know, commercially owned. We had a bad actor that was trying to impersonate the sale of a racetrack here in Michigan. Sometimes they'll just get completely bold.
Tom, how did they sell? How did they do it with a vacant second home? Do they actually break the lock on the door? How do they show the house?
Yeah, we're hearing that. Or if it's up for rent, you book it, you get the code, and all of a sudden you're using that rental opportunity to masquerade as an agent. Or, I mean, they're crafty. Think about that. I mean, I'm just going to sit on this thing for 5 days and I'm going to pop up a listing or FSBO post and I'm going to act like I'm a real estate agent. We just start scheduling showings. We have heard of some that are literally breaking and they're breaking and entering under a different pretext there. But yeah, we have heard of that as well.
You mentioned about fake IDs. So I guess a two-part question. How does the average title agent verify these well-crafted phony IDs? And how does certified help identify a phony ID?
So we use a multi-layered approach here at Sun Title. Some of them are obvious, but I think we've moved beyond the average person being able to detect whether or not it was a state issued ID or a US issued or a foreign country issued passport. So let's assume we're beyond that because they're just too good. I subscribe to Forewarn. Forewarn is a great database where you can quickly put in somebody's name and location or a phone number, and you can backtrace known existing phone numbers and addresses, criminal records. If you guys have access to that, our multiple listing service boards provide that to all of our real estate agents, which is a great source. But when it comes to the ID, we use Certified Match on any vacant seller. I'll put seller in air quotes, where it'll do a biometric analysis and a true credential analysis of the ID or the passport being presented. And that gets traced back to public databases and private databases to make sure that it's not something that has been knocked off.
And that sounds like a complicated process, but really it's all, you can do it on a cell phone, right? You get the prompt.
You can do it on a cell, yes. 9 times out of 10, you can do it on a cell phone. I dealt with one today where it was an elderly gentleman. He's not super sophisticated, but then I looked him up on Forewarn. I looked at the parcel was recently split. I looked at the parcel application that went into the township. The agent had a pre-existing relationship and he's showing up for closing in person. Okay, I'm comfortable. You know what I'm saying? I'm comfortable enough. So just know that on some of these, while you have technology layer that you always want to look at, when I say procedure was one of those five layers of security, you have to always have a spillway to say, okay, what if the technology can't or won't be used? And you'll have those situations with any technology. That's where you slow the gear and you really like do your diligence, no different than the title search. Now we have to vet identity in a whole different way. And if we're not comfortable, then it's like, all right, let's meet in the office before closing with the agent, you know, let's have a conversation. But these agents that, nope, never met them, came online, won't meet on site, quick cash closing, mail away because he's traveling overseas. No.
Yeah. And Florida Realtors does provide Forewarn for free to all of the Florida agents and brokers. So they all do have that.
I use that solution multiple times a day. I use that thing all the time. Yep.
Just to my concern, Tom, having done claims for so many years, I'm more worried about the folks who do show up to the sellers who do show up to the closing with really good fake ID.
Yeah. So that's why I'm saying we won't go through unless we vet that like in real time. But Michael, that's always a risk that we're going to face is that in person.
Yeah. All right. Thanks guys. Good stuff.
All right.
Now I want to add something. Even if we had a seller in, so let's say we didn't verify because it wasn't vacant, we won't wire to a seller without certified being used, even if they're in our closing room. And we've had sellers multiple times every week go through certified right in front of our notary closer. And they think it's cool. They're asking questions about themselves, about college and things that they don't remember. But we will not wire without certified being used, even if they're in person.
All right. Absolutely. Michael, anything else that we're missing there? Or did you sum it all up?
That's good.
All right. Well, thanks again so much, Tom. We appreciate you joining us today. And as always, you know, we can go to your website or our website. We can find each other there. Thank you so much for the longstanding relationship with Old Republic and with the fund. And we look forward to hearing you again sometime soon.
No, like any attorney, I got more stuff to say. So you tell me when, and we'll get back on this topic. Yeah, but great job. Thanks again for just spreading the awareness. And Shannon, if you need it, that tech stack I can resend to you. I think that could add a lot of value in the journey that they may be on or are embarking on.
That's great. Thank you so much. All right. Have a great day. And thank you all so much for attending Title Now. And as always, thank you for your support of the fund.